Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Michael Harlan Turkel, host of The Food Scene. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Live from Brooklyn, New York, welcome to Fun Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this live weekly show on all things fermented.
This is episode 129. It will be archived on iTunes, Stitcher, and right here on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Mary, you have a big list of things that are going on, but are you fermenting anything right now?
Oh, yeah. I say that a little dejectedly because I'm working on some new recipes, some new short mead recipes in particular, and also some sugar-based ferments, but our kitchen counter is such a disaster right now that I haven't had room nor time to ferment. So I have several, a list of ideas. So hopefully this week.
You said short, well, tonight after this show, we're going to ferment a lot of stuff.
Right.
For one of your announcements. But you said short mead, right?
Yeah.
So did you know that National Mead Day is this coming Saturday?
Oh my God, that's right.
It was started in 2002 by the American Homebrewers Association, and it aims to celebrate mead makers. And if you are a mead maker, invite some friends over and make some mead. Show your friends. It's almost like teach your friend how to homebrew day. It is, teach your friend how to make some mead. But short mead, you could actually brew a mead and serve it even Saturday, maybe, right?
Yeah.
If you went really low, what would you do?
If you use champagne yeast. So I would do a pound of honey per a gallon of water in your flavorings, and then hit it with champagne yeast and overpitch a little bit, some beer yeast nutrient in it to give that yeast what it needs, and then I would ferment it hot, and I think you'd be fine.
And you could actually, and then that would be ready, and you could drink it while you're teaching other people how to make some first
strength meads. Absolutely, especially if you're kegging. Meads. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that would be key, right?
Yeah.
Friday
and
night.
I do have, I have a mojito short mead in the works.
Mojito
so I had made
mead.
A mint short mead,
that?
And the mint by itself, well, you thought it was too minty goodness. So that was 1 gallon. So I went ahead and that's in hanging out around 34 in our cold crash freezer right now. And I am fermenting a lime short mead. So I actually need to take gravity on that tonight when we get home. I made 2 gallons of a lime short mead, and then I'm going to blend those together to make kind of a mojito short mead. So that is definitely in the fermentation works. I have that pineapple cider, which you did not love.
That's
but
true.
I do
did not love that.
That I need to carbonate. I just
mean, I
ordered
love pineapple. I just didn't work for me.
I know, but I'm working on that anyway. I just ordered 2 more 1.75 gallon kegs from Williams Brewing. I love those suckers. They are supposed to be delivered to FedEx tomorrow, so hopefully I can pick them up on Wednesday. I would highly recommend what? I have to say something because these 1.75 gallon kegs are great. And they cost just as much, if not maybe a little more than a 5 gallon keg, but they'll last you forever, and they're just super convenient. There, you can put them in a backpack and get on the subway or whatever,
and go to the nearest park and
yes.
drink legally at Groton Point Park, right? Or something like that.
Speaking of that, I will say another thing for these small kegs is I actually had a 3 gallon keg of strawberry Sema and a 1.75 gallon keg of a fermented jasmine green tea. Not beer, I guess. We celebrated Brooklyn Homebrew's last day yesterday. That is, so unfortunately, Danielle and Benjamin have closed up shop at Brooklyn Homebrew. It was a fantastic homebrew shop. So we're very sad to see them go. It will leave a big hole in the New York City homebrewing supply community. But we wish them all the best on their next ventures, whatever those may be. Anyway, I was able to take both these kegs in 2 plastic buckets. I bungee corded them to a cart, and I took the G train. I walked a mile to the G train, carried him down the stairs, took the G train, and then walked almost a mile to Brooklyn Homebrew, and it was super easy and relatively quick. And
so the point is, small kegs are
very portable,
especially if you're
super
not going to go. You're not always going to go through 5 gallons of whatever you make in one night, so you could actually even brew 5 gallons of something and split it down into these kegs.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, well, yeah, 5 gallon batch, you could split them into 3 1.75 gallon kegs.
And you could tincture them all differently. You could make 5 gallons and have 3 different beers.
Yeah, exactly. Or dry hop them or whatever. The other cool thing that we just recently ordered
is
Chris and I are big fans of the carbonator cap. So we actually have the blue plastic ones right now. And what I've discovered is I've been doing a lot of dry hopped ciders lately, but you know, I'm racking it over, and at the end, you know, those hops kind of get roused and it's just a soupy mess. So I filled my keg, and then there was still enough of this super saturated green hoppy cider mess at the bottom of the carboy, and I didn't want to waste it. So I ended up racking it off into a 20 ounce soda bottle. I then put that in our cold crash freezer, let it settle overnight, decanted it into another 20 ounce soda, leaving all the hop gunk behind, and force carbonated it with one of these carbonator caps. So that was 20 ounces of a beautiful dry hop cider that I would have just wasted otherwise. And I was able to actually take that and share it with a friend. So we just ordered some stainless steel carbonator cap. So those should be coming in the next like week and a half. Anyway, we'll have a review of those coming up because I'm pretty excited about that. I've found that a lot of times might have, you know, I'm using these 1.75 gallon keg, but if I make something in a 2 gallon pail and I don't have very much troub, like if it's a sugar based drink or a cider or something, then, and I don't, or even like a tea based short meat, I don't have troub, then I'll have just enough left over after I fill the 1.75 gallon keg that I can put in, you know, some kind of soda bottle and force carb it with the carb cap. So another big fan. We'll let you know how the stainless steel ones work for us. So Saturday we had the great fortune to judge a homebrew competition at Gun Hill Brewing Company. Gun Hill is a newer brewery in the Bronx, and it was a super fun homebrew comp. Chris?
It was a really amazing comp, and it was a competition, and it was also just an awesome brewery. And you know, we often talk about diversity in the brewing world today, and it was just, man, there was...
Or the lack of diversity. That's something that comes up in the craft, you know, brewing and beer world, is that there is a distinct lack of diversity as far as not only gender, but also...
Ethnicity.
Yes, absolutely. Culture, yeah. So...
Live Jamaican band, Jerk Chicken, deep in the Bronx. It was pretty hip. The winners of this competition were Hector Borgia and Max Balkin, who tied. Max had a pale ale, and Hector Borgia, it was his first time brewing at all, and he's quite a reader and researcher, and he made a Rauch beer.
It was a pale ale Rauch beer that was also had some bourbon oak chips. So now naturally you think, holy cow, that's a lot going on, you know. It totally goes against the keep it simple, stupid rule. And it was actually wonderfully in balance and they all melded. No part was too strong. And we were very impressed, obviously.
Did not taste the 8% that it was. Mm-hmm. Went down easy. Phil Clark was second place. Phil Clark runs the Westchester Home Brewers Emporium. And then Sean Elwinger was the people's choice, who made a beer with heady topper yeast.
Yes. So I've got a couple more announcements. So first of have you wanted to go to hop school? If you are a home brewer or a nano brewer, Hop Union has a hop school on September 3rd and 4th in Yakima, Washington. I will be there, and it sounds super cool. There's lectures. You get to go to the hop fields. You get to rub hops, all kinds of good stuff. Go to hopunion.com if you are interested in that. Also, as a reminder, if you are an AHA or a Brewers Association member and you are planning on going to GABF, the private AHABA member sale goes on tomorrow at noon. If you are not a member of those wonderful organizations, Great American Beer Fest, then the public sale is Wednesday, July 29th. That is this Wednesday at noon. I'm sorry, these are all Eastern Standard Time. So noon Eastern Standard Time if you are interested in going to Great American Beer Festival in Denver, Colorado. The other thing is, I was recently on Steal This Beer. That is a newer podcast from Augie Carton, owner of Carton Brewing Company, and John Hall, who is the editor of All About Beer, and as well as Justin Kennedy, who's a great beer writer. So I was on episode 17. That was just posted today. That's on steelthisbeer.com.
With any luck, it'll be as good as episode 8.
Yes, which was Kuzme. And last but not least, if you are going to Belgian Comes to Cooperstown at Omegang Brewery in Cooperstown, New York, Chris Kuzme and I will be there pouring for Kelso Brewing Company.
That's
We're
right.
super excited. The other cool thing is that we are going to be pouring a bunch of speed brews from the book.
That we're brewing tonight.
So look for our pop-up canopy, and I'll have a big... a pretty decent speed brewing banner. So if you are at BCTC and you want to try some of these beverages, come on by. We're going to have a dry hop cider. We're going to have a fermented jasmine green tea and some kind of short meat and probably a couple other fun beverages. So we'd love to see you.
Those things are all gluten-free, aren't they, Mary?
Yes, they are.
Wow. Remember that episode? What was it? Episode 14 that we had?
That
was a long time ago. We were young bucks in this radio thing, and we just met this dude who was really cool, kind of nice, kind of shy. Actually, maybe not too shy, but definitely cool, and brewed his ass off with some amazing gluten-free beers. We have him back, and he's on the line with us today. Brian Kulbaki, this is your life.
What's going on, guys?
How you doing, Brian? Thanks for being patient through our 10 minutes of, I don't know what we just did, actually.
Announcements and sharing time. I have a lot to say. There's a lot of exciting stuff going on. Come on. Anyway.
I was able to relate to a lot of that, Barry. It was great.
So tell us, first of all, so episode 14 was a long time ago. We're actually on episode 129 currently. Tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you start homebrewing?
Oh, boy. So let's see. When we first met, that would have been, episode 14 would have been 2013. That would have been right after my gluten-free IPA
yep.
took third place in Homebrew Alley there. Received my little ribbon right from Mr. Kuzme himself at the at the award ceremony there, and since then I have basically spent the last 2.5 years looking for property to start our own brewery, and we are hoping to finally open up in downtown Jersey City, hopefully the second weekend of August. Finally,
wow, that's very very close, very near.
Yeah, it's very, very close. In retrospect, it's only about 5.5 years after I started homebrewing, so the hobby spiraled out of control for me very, very quickly.
So tell us a little bit about, it sounds like finding a space was really challenging, right?
Oh, yeah. That was definitely the heartbreaking part many times over and over again, either between city regulations or... landlords that were difficult to deal with, or just finding the money in and of itself to be able to afford the kind of location you wanted. You go into it with such a vision from day one that you want to make sure all those things are going to be on the same page and support your goal. And it took quite a while. It took walking away from some leases just falling through, and then I had actually looked at the property that we ended up signing with before episode 14 ever aired, back in November of 2012.
Wow.
I had first looked at this property.
And you circled back to it?
Every time something fell through, I circled back to the landlord. The space was about twice the size it is now. Circled back to the landlord and begged them again to break it up in half so I could afford it. And every time they told me no. And then finally I found a lady on Craigslist who makes some fantastic alcohol-infused gelato, and went back to the landlord and said, hey, I got another business that will take the front half of the space if you'll build the wall. And finally he relented and he gave in and he built the wall, and I have a brewery.
Awesome!
How many square feet is your brewery then?
What's that?
Space-wise, how many square feet is the brewery space?
The brewery space itself is a total of just under 2,000 square feet. We have a 15 by 15 walk-in that takes up a nice big chunk of that.
Mm-hmm.
And the brewery equipment itself is all crammed into roughly 500 square feet with another 250 that are sort of the staging area. It's a perfectly embodies my life. It's an absolute mess, but it's an organized mess.
I can dig it. So.
It worked out well, though. We got very lucky. We have a building that actually has a loading dock in downtown Jersey City, and it's the only building in downtown Jersey City that is a national historical landmark. It was the original A&P building back in the day when they made their own food and had all their offices.
Wow.
In one location.
Awesome. And that's pretty accessible from not only locations in Jersey, but also New York City.
Exactly. I'm trying to figure out the best way to market that. I like to say we're a microbrewery with mass transit access, but I think there's a better way to phrase it. But yeah, we're two blocks away from the Grant Street Path station. We've got the ferry about five blocks away. The podcast that you were on, Mary, is they typically come out of Barcade in Jersey City, which is about a five-minute walk from the brewery. So we're pretty prime location, I think.
Yeah, that's awesome. We're going to take a really brief break, and come right back to learn more about your brewing system and what you're doing.
And what you're going to be serving at the tap room.
L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
This is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Welcome back to episode 129 of For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We are on the phone with our dear friend Brian Klobocki, graduate of the American Brewers Guild and proprietor, owner, brewer of Departed Souls in Jersey City.
So tell us a little bit about your system. What? How big is it? How'd you decide on it? And...
Well, I still brew in plastic buckets for the most part. Well, that's a lie. We have a little tippy system here in Jersey City that fills our tasting room up. But we're brewing on a big 7-barrel craft work system made right in Detroit, Michigan. But we ferment over into 15-barrel fermenters and a 15-barrel bright tank. We got 4 fermenters, 1 bright tank. And you know it's a whole heck of a lot different than the kettles and the tippy system that I was used to up until back in May.
And you said did you keep your tippy system to do pilot stuff on?
Absolutely, yeah. Cool. I was fortunate enough to buy it used off of somebody up in Connecticut last year, and it's almost frustrating at this point because it takes me even longer to brew 10 gallons on that than it does to brew 210 gallons on the big system.
Yeah. So tell
and
us
just as much cleanup.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
right.
No doubt.
Yeah, right.
So tell us a little bit about your philosophy behind Departed Souls. How did you go into it, and what are your plans? What kind of beer are you making?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, that going all the way back to 115 episodes ago, even that has changed quite a bit. With the gluten-free beer, that was something I had started to make for my best friend who had celiac disease and was unable to drink the regular craft beer that we had become accustomed to enjoying together. And so I had started brewing that beer for him specifically so that when I would go over to his apartment or his parents' house, there was actually something in his fridge that I would drink. That time we had decided to try and start a brew pub together, but unfortunately he passed away in 2010 before we had met. And sort of fell off.
Uh-oh, we just lost you.
Oh, we lost Brian. Brian, well, we're not going to...
Well, while Liz, our wonderful engineer Liz, is getting Brian back on the phone, I am going to give you some brand spanking new statistics. Awesome, exciting craft brewing statistics from the Brewers Association.
I like this.
They actually just released data for the first year, the first half of this year of 2015, and it's pretty exciting. So from January until the end of June 2015, there were approximately 12.2 million barrels of beer sold by craft brewers. That's up from 10.6. So that's almost 2 million more barrels of beer that were sold by craft brewers in this country. And currently, there are 3,739 craft brewers in America. And another... 3,739. So that's actually an increase of 699 breweries over the same time period for 2014. And there are also almost 1,800 breweries in planning right now. Craft brewers are now employing an estimated 469 full-time and part-time workers, which is pretty cool.
That is amazing. They just put those up in the brewery?
Yeah, I just got that this morning from the Brewers Association. So you can find out more at brewersassociation.org if you would like to know more. But it's super exciting to be in an industry that, you know, has such healthy growth and is doing, you know, exciting things and doing it with a lot of passion.
Keep supporting your local breweries.
Yeah.
But don't stand for anything less than quality. Did they give the breweries and planning stats?
Yes, I just said that.
I didn't pay attention to that part. I was so excited about the other part.
There's 1,755 breweries and planning. Yeah, that's pretty exciting. So I also got another, since we're talking here.
Oh, Brian Kulbacki is back.
Oh, I'm back.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. So when we left off, we were... your friend had passed, 2010.
Yep. And so when we had met, when I met you guys the first time, that was the first time I ever entered my beer into a competition. And obviously it went kind of well. at that point, I had decided to drop the brew club idea that my friend and I were talking about to just the brewery, and that we were going to do 100% gluten-free beer. Mm-hmm. That plan has since changed. We're doing both gluten-free beer and traditional beer. And very much thanks to the American Brewers Guild, got in touch with some of the brewers down at Dogfish Head to sort of learn how they're able to do both on the same system. So we're launching with 100% or two beers made with 100% gluten-free ingredients, the same IPA that we had back then, as well as a sort of the yin to the yang of that beer, which is a very, very hop-forward, earthy, roasty black IPA, mm-hmm. Both of which I will be sending out to the Great American Beer Festival to hopefully get some good feedback from the judges out there.
Do you intend to serve out there, too?
Then we'll also have a 5.75% more traditional malty red ale and an 8.2% Belgian triple that we're rolling out with that are both definitely not gluten.
Right. How many taps do you have in your tap room, in your tasting room?
We have 8. So the goal is to always have those 4 flagships on and then really get to keep messing around. Jersey City has a very vibrant home brewer community. We hope to work with them, let them mess around on the 50 system, and hopefully let the tasting room somewhat operate as a think tank for home brewers that are local, let them get some feedback on their beer, because I, at least personally speaking, that was something I wish I could have done a little bit more, but it's not something that's too realistic. And after going through the struggle of trying to find the money to start a brewery, I think if you could go to a a banker, an investor, and say, hey, look, I've had my beer on draft here. This is the criticism I've got. This is the feedback I've got. People love it. You know, it might help people out.
Absolutely. And being able to spend some time with you, who has gone through schooling, and, you know, not everybody can afford or can wait, be on the wait list to go to such, you know, the School of American Brewers Guild or things, are just the hands-on experience that you're going to have from the brewery. Passing that on is invaluable.
Absolutely. And we definitely have some, you know, access to some different or more unique ingredients, too, that as a home brewer, never imagined I'd get my hands on. So
yeah, right.
that makes it a little more fun, too, for everybody.
And to that regard, what is your favorite substrate for gluten-free beers?
What's
or
that?
What is your favorite... what are you fermenting in your gluten-free beers?
Right now, we have we basically just start from scratch every time. My dad still calls it mad science experiments whenever he comes up for a brew day. But you know, every beer that we brew that's gluten-free, I like to say, has at least one or two secret ingredients. And they're honestly things you could probably get at the closest convenience store to where you guys are broadcasting out of. But they're just not traditional beer ingredients, and we use those to get our color or our aroma or just mask the terrible sorghum flavor. But other than that, we're using the same yeast, the same hops, the same water as anybody else that's making beer in Jersey City in their apartment kitchen.
Have you ever brewed with millet or sorghum?
So I'm just using sorghum extract currently. I have not brewed with millet. One thing I tried to be very sensitive to when doing this was price point, and I talked to a lot of bar owners and asked, you know, what price point I had to be at for them to give gluten-free beer on draft a try.
Right.
And once it came to incorporating gluten-free oats or chestnuts or millet on, you know, a 7 or 15 barrel scale, price point, it was just
sure
more or less impossible.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What kind of reception have you been getting to your gluten-free beers?
I've learned that I have to have a lot thicker skin because people can be really mean on the internet.
Yes, that is very true,
absolutely.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So right now, all we've done is we've sent out a couple pilot batches, basically trying to tweak our recipe and see how they're all going to agree with the big system and with the commercial ingredients. So we've sent out a couple pilot batches to bars to gather feedback and then to tweak again and tweak again. The Black IPA came out really, really well. The bars that put it on crushed it. The IPA, the first batch of the IPA came out with this crazy lemon citrus character to it that I never experienced in this beer before. The second batch came out much more on point with where we wanted to. And basically what I've taken to doing is going to the bars and saying, hey, you know, put this as Goodbye PA or a Dark Night on your menu. Don't mention that it's gluten-free. Put like an asterisk at the bottom of the menu if you'd like that says ask about our gluten-free draft options. And the bars that have listened to me and have done that have gone through. I'm typically seeing turnover of six bowls in 4 to 5 days, which
wow.
Personally I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. When did your beer first hit the market?
We started putting beer out to the public, the first pilot batches out June 16th, which happened to coincide with two very important dates. We needed to be distributing by June 16th to enter our beer into the Great American Beer Festival this year.
Yep.
And B, that would have been my friend who passed away. That would have been his 29th birthday. So we did
that's beautiful.
Soft opening / birthday party for him at the brewery and got our beer out to the world.
And what should people expect when they come to your, once you finally open your tasting room? What kind of experience are you offering?
What we're trying to do, it's very intimate, first of all. It's only 49 people. There's basically three areas set up, a couple big communal tables, a couple very tiny 2 feet high toppers. Basically, what we've tried to do is bring the Jersey City culture inside Jersey City. Actually, it's a lot like Brooklyn. It's sort of going through a renaissance right now, very young, very artist-oriented, independent community kind of thing.
And so basically that's what we're trying to do. The inside of the brewery is all murals, partially done by local artists, partially done by me and my dog. the footprints on the floor, those are his. But other than that, you know, we didn't want to do the industrial sheet thing. You know, I feel like a lot of breweries you go into these days are recycled pallets everywhere. I just wanted to do something a little different. So we're more of the street art kind of thing going on. There's skateboards everywhere and trying to have a different vibe.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So if you want to keep up to date on Departed Souls Brewing, you can follow them on Facebook. You also have a Twitter.
And Instagram.
And an Instagram. So keep up to date, and then that will be where you announce the official tasting room opening, correct?
Spell Souls. It's Souls.
Absolutely.
It's S-O-L-E-S.
We'll probably just blow it up on all of them.
Awesome. Yeah, that's true. So Chris just said it's Departed Souls. It's S-O-L-E-S. And then you have another big event coming up on Thursday, August 20th in Hoboken, correct?
Yeah, that's the first time we're putting all four beers of ours on draft in one location other than the brewery. It's at Cork City on 3rd and Bloomfield.
And that is also a very easy to get to from New York City as well, either on the path. And I think there's probably a ferry as well. So
I vote we bring a posse.
Yeah, path, ferry, or the bus drops you off right on the corner of 3rd and Washington.
I like the ferry. The ferry in August, gorgeous.
That's true. So any tips that you would give to homebrewers that are thinking of starting their own brewery, whether it be gluten-free or not? What's something that you really learned?
Befriend Chris Kuchner and Mary Gazette, first of all.
Yes.
Go to the American Brewers Guild Brewing School. I think the connections that you can make, honestly, by going back to school and learning the engineering and science, not just what you learn on the forums, is huge.
Yep.
But definitely talk to all the local breweries. Don't just pop up out of nowhere with a big system. Talk to everybody, because having everybody on your side is super helpful when you need hops and you're in a pinch, or yeast and you're in a pinch, or your fermenters won't hold crash for some strange reason.
So join the community.
Exactly. Exactly. You come up and stay a part of the home brewer community, but involve yourself and entrench yourself with the professional brewers too.
Absolutely. Brian, thank you so much, man. We will see you soon, and we're going to try and bring a posse from New York for you on the 20th, man.
Yep.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Take care and good luck.
Yeah, man.
Thank you, Mary.
See you soon.
Today's show, thank you to Liz Smith, our engineer.
Also, thank you, listener, for tuning in. If you liked what you heard, first of all, tell your friends to subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can also, if you like our show and want more people to find out about it, a great way to do that is by rating and reviewing our show, because that helps boost it to other people. And feel free to get in touch with us at heritageradionetwork.org as well.
Next up, we have a teaser clip of Danny Bowen. Mission Chinese Food, talking the intersection of food and family on Eat Your Words, another great show found by our constituents here on Heritage Radio Network. Fermented bad.
You know, we weren't the most well-off family growing up, so we always ate at home. We didn't go out to restaurants that often.
Acclaimed chef Danny Bowen of Mission Chinese has fond memories of food and family.
And my mom cooked, you know, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and yeah. I was just so fascinated. I'd always stand in the kitchen and cook with my mom, which is it was amazing. You know, it was like really cool. It was a good time that we always spend that time together, and I think that's what really inspired me to want to cook. And it was cool because for that, you know, hour and a half that we ate, or hour that we ate every night, you know, the whole family was there, and my dad was there and he worked, so I got to see him and talk to him. So it was cool. I always thought that like cooking and bringing people together, being able to hang out with your friends or your family is really important. I think that was one of the major reasons that I wanted to cook. I didn't know that once I started cooking, I would never see my family or friends because I'd be cooking all the time. But but you know, it's you see them when they come to the restaurant.
You're fostering friendship and family for other people,
right,
I guess.
Right.
Good times.
Yeah.
This was an excerpt of episode 100 of Eat Your Words, hosted by Kathy Irway. All episodes available on heritageradionetwork.org and iTunes. This piece was brought to you by EscapeMaker.com. Visit a farm, escape through the net, escapemaker.com.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.